This episode of East Meets West is brought to you by Ting.com. Ting gives you big savings and billing clarity for mobile phone service. Try their online savings calculator and save $50 on your device purchase at emw.ting.com. Welcome to East Meets West, episode 296. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chen.
I think we figured out Roger's audio issues, so no more of that crap.
Hopefully. Hopefully no more.
Hopefully. Knock on composite wood. Hey, we got a sponsor. Well, big thanks to the guys from Ting.com.
Yes, that's really awesome.
Yeah, I don't know that we deserve it, but we will try.
We'll try to earn their recognition.
We will try to earn your faith in us. I've met the CEO of Ting. They're nice guys. They're the same guys that do Hover.com. They're two cows guys up there. Canadians. But Ting is a U.S. service. We'll tell you more about it a little bit later. But check it out, emw.ting.com. Did you watch the debate, Roger?
I watched part of it, and to be quite frank, I was really bored and totally uninterested in anything they were saying.
I was with you, man. I love debates. It's one of those things where I get really excited just to see the zingers and the back and forth and how they deal with the issues, you know.
The backhanded remarks.
I want the demagoguery. There you go again. Can't I finish? You're no Jack Kennedy. I want those moments, right? I love that stuff. And wow, by halfway through the debate, I was getting up, walking around doing the dishes, like just kind of half paying attention.
I think part of it is I already kind of know what their respective platforms are. And to be quite honest, this is a public presentation. Of course they're going to say things that are going to, you know, borderline populist, kind of elicit, at least from their point of view, a positive reaction to the messages that delivering. So I don't know. I don't put a lot of stock in it. I think it's a very interesting part of the election cycle. And I think it is an important part, but the way it's kind of developed into what it is, I don't know. If you took someone from a foreign country who never watched TV before, but you showed them America's Top Model, America's Got Talent, Dancing with the Stars, and then the presidential debates, they would think it would be yet another kind of reality popularity contest, because that's what that is.
Yeah. Popularity contest. Well, we've joked about that before. I know America's Next Top Officer.
I'll tell you what I did. I immediately hopped onto Netflix, instant streaming, and I watched a very depressing documentary about first responders in South Africa.
That'll cheer you up. I actually thought I want to give props to Governor Romney. I thought he did a fair job. You know, he got off his Big Bird line. So that got some reaction. I thought he actually had the funniest moment of the night when he responded to Barack Obama, who made a very sweet happy anniversary to his wife because it happened to be their anniversary. And Governor Romney said, you know, I'm sure this is not how you want to be spending your anniversary here with me. And it was very genuine and very funny. And it didn't feel like a dig. It just felt like him being a human. And I thought that was probably the best moment of the night, frankly, and that's not saying much. The rest of the time, it really dragged down, and I blame President Obama for that. I mean, he really was not an inspiring speaker, and we know he can be an inspiring speaker, and he just looked put out to be there.
I honestly think they should do those things over Skype or something in their pajamas.
You don't think that is undignified, Roger?
I think
for the office of the President of the United States.
Believe me, of all the things that are, quote, dignified and undignified, you're only going to see their head and shoulders. I think kids today, people today, are very comfortable with the jerky, you know, image quality and the kind of hollowed out audio quality you get from internet, you know, video conferencing.
So you want, like, mitt cam and...
And, I think it would be cool. And I think, honestly, I think there's so much energy involved in trying to put up that space and all that other stuff to get ready. I mean, I could see it being very much like a recital, you know, for a big concert. It's just, you know, it's another performance you need to do.
You know, I got in a big argument with a guy on Twitter because he was jumping to the conclusion that I'm a Barack Obama fan or a Democrat, which I am not a Democrat. I like the guy fine. I don't necessarily plan to vote for him. In fact, I'm pretty sure I won't. But I had said this was just like 2004. You had an incumbent president who looked put out to be there, who looked tired, and you had an arrogant rich guy. Which in 2004 was John Kerry, and this year it was Mitt Romney. Now, granted, that wasn't very nice to either one of them, but the guy's like, oh, just because your guy lost, you know, you're saying the debate doesn't matter. I'm like, no, I'm saying debates don't matter because debates don't matter. Yeah. And I sent him the seminal study on this was done in 1964 about the 1960 presidential debate between Nixon and Kennedy, and it surveyed whether people actually changed their vote based on the debate. And they found that no. What the debates do are strengthen the opinions of those who have already decided.
Yeah.
But they have very little effect on the middle ground. Now, there are a few studies out there that question that and say they found some small effect in undecided voters. But most of the studies pretty much say the debates really don't change anybody's mind.
No, they should. They would. Why would they? I mean, there's nothing substantial that's really discussed. It's more of my position. And how I plan, it's things that you've already heard. I mean, if you don't have a decision at this point, I don't think listening to that debate is going to suddenly give you that epiphany. It's like, uh-huh, I understand him now. I totally see his point of view. I mean,
it's all an emotional appeal, too. It's all about who looked good, who sounded good. I mean, that's, even we were just doing that. At least I was just doing that. He looked tired. He looked excited. And that doesn't have anything to do with their actual competency as president or their beliefs and plans.
You know, at some point I honestly believe that something's going to break and someone's going to come out with a different idea for, you know, having some sort of, and not to say debates by themselves are bad. I think it's a very good idea, but actually a debate instead of kind of talking to my peeps, as it were.
Well, yeah, you know, and a lot of people were giving Jim Lehrer, who was moderating, a lot of guff on Twitter because he didn't seem to be in control. And I agree that he wasn't in control. But if you recall, Tom Brokaw got the same kind of guff. And essentially, any moderator who tries to take control can't, because the only way that these two candidates agree to do the debate is if they're in control. And you're not going to tell them to shut up. They're the candidates for president of the United States.
I've always wondered, why don't they just preempt? I mean, like, you know, he said, like, there's a time that there's 3 minutes. You know, there's 3 minutes left, we have to get all this stuff in. I'm wondering if these things just don't go over. It's like a sports game. You know, it's another hour, another half hour.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand why.
How is it that the Oscars can go half hour, 45 minutes long every year, but not the presidential debate?
I think the whole thing is a wonderful example of the theatrics that the modern day
political
campaign, and it's not even just presidential. I mean, you know, for governor, for any kind of high powered position where, you know, to be frank, money is at stake, everything starts turning into a production.
Well, I wanted to. That leads me into wanting to talk about the book I'm reading right now. I'm reading Republic Lost by Lawrence Lessig. It's been out for about a year now. I think it came out in October of last year. I'm about halfway through it, so I want to share some thoughts with you about that, Roger. But let's thank our sponsor for today's show. This episode of East Meets West brought to you by Ting, a new mobile service that makes sense. Comes to us, as we mentioned, from the guys at 2Cows, same folks that bring you Hover.com. All about bringing clarity, usability, and big savings to mobile phone users. Think about Hover. They do domain name registration, and what they do right is they make it easy. It shouldn't be hard to register a domain name. Not only do they make it easy, but they build their reputation on customer service. So they don't always have the cheapest way, but they have the easiest and the best way, and they're trying to bring that to cell phone service, but not only, but also make it affordable, make it cheaper than the high dollars that you pay to these big carriers out there. It runs on the Sprint network. It's what you call an MVNO, and they have a simple plan, fair pricing, easy to understand, bills you megabytes, minutes, and text messages separately. So if you use less than you anticipated, you're actually credited the difference at the end of the month. It's not one of these, we want to trick you into going over so we can charge you, but if you go under, we'll never give you anything back. It basically says, look, you will pay for what you use. If you use more, you're billed for the additional amount, but it's just the next level. It's not some punitive amount. So there's no premiums, there's no penalties. You just pay for what you use. They offer 4G Android phones, WiMAX phones through Sprint, and when you go to the Ting website, ting.com, you get clear snapshots of your usage by device. Easy access to your billing information. You aren't going to have to dig around for it. Lots of control over the features. Lots of help content. They have the best customer service team in the world. Same folks working on Hover are working on Ting. Tweet from a new customer back in February. My Ting phone bill was $22 last month. That's exactly $100 less than AT&T. So you might want to check this out. There's no wait customer support. They have the same thing on Hover. 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you call, someone picks up. You're not going to get put on hold. You can also do email support if it's after hours. They log your customer feedback. They have a blog. They're on Twitter. They post release notes for changes. And they're run by a bunch of geeks. They understand. They're smart, passionate people, and they want to help you solve your problem. They don't want to rip you off. They understand that they make more money when people are happy and stay with their company. So go try their online savings calculator. It's emw.ting.com. Enter your usage and cost for the last few months. Ting will tell you how much they think you can save by getting a phone from Ting. And they're adding more phones all the time. They've got the Motorola Photon. They've got the HTC Detail, the Samsung Conquer, the Samsung Transform, the LG Optimus. These are phones that you're going to have to pay a little more for than you would at the other guys, but you're going to make it up by saving on your monthly. So even if you pay $155 for the LG Optimus instead of getting it for $50 or free or something like that, you're going to make it up quick by better managing your mobile phone usage with Ting. Ting's a new mobile phone service. It makes sense. Try it out. emw.ting.com. And when you do, actually, you'll save $50 on your device purchase. So we thank Ting for their support of East Meets West. Even if just a few of you try it out, I think it'll impress them, because I don't know. I don't think they expect anyone to respond to East Meets West ads, but we're happy to have them. So please,
it's great.
Please at least go to the website, emw.ting.com. Big thanks to those guys. I love the guys at Two Cows. I've loved them since they were Two Cows, like back in the 90s.
And not just because they're a sponsor. I mean, Ting actually gives you a very effective way to manage your usage, because I mean, like for example, I'm on T-Mobile. I have to buy blocks. I have to buy these, you know, blocks of time of voice time that I don't ever use. And there's nothing lower. So I spend automatically $40 a month for something I really don't make use of. And Ting allows you to get a lot more granular in your control. So you only pay for what you use.
You know, Verizon is who I've got for the iPhone, and I know Ting's trying to get the iPhone. And the one thing that sucks, they give you unlimited text and voice minutes now. That's just part of the new Verizon plans. But then you have to guess how much data you're going to use. And if you guess wrong, you're wasting money. And if you guess really wrong, you're spending a lot of money. Because, I mean, basically, if you guess wrong one direction, it means that you're just spending money on data you're not using. But if you guess wrong the other direction, you get those punitive overage charges.
Yeah, and it's like one of those things. Just charge me for what I use, and don't try to shoehorn me into these drawers of usage. Like, oh, you're a moderate user. Oh, you're a high intensive user. Oh, you're like super user. And you know, you have these categories that you straddle, because you know, sometimes I use a lot of data, sometimes I don't, depending on, for example, CES. If I had a data cap, I'd blow through it, because I'm constantly using my phone for intensely for like 2 weeks.
You know, that list of phones that I was reading off of doesn't do them justice. They got the Samsung Galaxy S3 now.
That is an awesome phone, and I want to get one.
Yeah.
They are awesome phones. If anyone hasn't had a chance to see the Samsung Galaxy S3, you will love it. The only my only real gripe with the phone is that it's a little too big. But functionality wise, it's an awesome phone.
Yeah, it's a great phone. No, I agree. I didn't go with the Galaxy S3 this time because I'm locked in. I realize I've got the golden chains with the iPhone, but I've got plans. I've got plans to get myself out of prison and be able to choose whatever phone I want next time. Not that the iPhone 5 is bad. It's actually a very good phone. But I didn't feel like I could move to the Galaxy S3 this time for reasons I can go in at length some other time. And I have gone in other places. So Lawrence Lessig, Republic Lost, have you heard much about it?
I think you brought it up to me once before or a few times before. I think actually earlier this year we were talking about it. You brought up Lawrence Lessig in his book.
I had not read it until starting this weekend. I finally got the audiobooks read by Lawrence Lessig, actually. He does a good job. Does a great job reading his own book. Not all authors are good at reading their own books, mind you. But I think it's pretty good. It's great to hear it in his own word because he gives the emphasis where you know he wants the emphasis to be. And the whole point of the book is to explain what is going wrong with Congress specifically. And the premise being that it has to do with money. And he's very careful to lay this out. And that's Lawrence Lessig for you. He's a thinker. He's a smart guy. Probably one of the smartest guys we know. He lays it out to say, look, it's not that people are taking bribes. Let's just get over that idea. You know, a lot of people are, all Congress is criminals. They're not, actually. They're very decent people. But he says, wouldn't it, you don't have to be an evil person to be corrupt. It's not, this isn't robber baron days where we can catch people taking kickbacks directly. He's like, not that it never happens. It does happen. We've had a few congressmen get caught doing it. But it doesn't happen nearly enough to be the problem. It's not the endemic problem. The endemic problem is money in the wrong place. And I'm starting to get an idea of why he's doing this, but he makes a big deal about saying, let's not try to prove that the money is influencing Congress. Let's just look at it and say, if you see a situation like this, does the fact that there's money involved call into doubt your confidence in the system? And he talks a lot about different non-political situations. He talks about cell phone radiation and how the studies paid for by the cellular telephone industry say something different than the studies that are independent. And it doesn't matter what they say. He's trying to point out when there's money involved, you start to wonder like, oh, are they saying something different because the cellular telephone industry is paying for them? He talks about BPA. And that's the plastic additive that causes estrogen, and it's linked to childhood obesity, and how absolutely no studies funded by the plastics industry have found any cause of harm of BPA, where almost all of the studies not funded by the industry have found connection and harm caused by BPA. And again, he's like, it doesn't matter for the purposes of my argument whether it does or not, but does the fact that there's money in a certain place call into doubt your confidence in the studies? And he's like, and then, so now he's about halfway through the book, he started to talk about Congress and about lobbying and about campaign finance and about the explosion of the importance of campaign finance and how it has taken over the daily life of a congressperson in a way that was not true back in the 50s and 60s. Like over the second half of this last century and the beginning of this century, Congress people have become fundraising machines that in their spare time act as representatives in the Congress. And he gives a lot of reasons why that is. And so he talks about how there's not a quid pro quo. There's no one going up, let's say very rarely, anybody going up to a congressperson and saying, hey, I'll donate $5,000 to your campaign if you vote to deregulate my industry. What's happening is what he calls a gift economy. And that's much more insidious because, and he cites a lot of studies about how gift economies create obligation where the person may not even understand that he feels this obligation. So campaign contributions come in and you feel grateful for them. You feel positive about the people who gave you campaign contributions. And then you're lobbied sometimes by these same companies. And you may feel like you're standing up for your beliefs and you're negotiating with them, but you are more likely to lean their way
because
you have this positive feeling. And so it creates a culture in which money in the wrong place is affecting people. And I can tell he's going to start bringing back in this confidence idea. And then I guess the second half of the book, hopefully, we'll get his plan for how to fix this. Because he does say it's, you know, how money has corrupted Congress and what we can do to change it.
It's a pretty spot on observation. I think, you know, one of the facets of, you know, of the human psyche is, like, you know, you tend to feel a little more gratitude towards someone who's benefited you in some way.
Sure.
And taken completely out of a political context, for example, a friend of yours is applying for a job at where you work, you're going to give them a little more, you're going to put a little more effort into helping that person out, whether it's getting their resume to the right person and making sure that person's read it and fully understands your friend's capabilities and what he brings. It definitely is a culture of obligation in many respects. And quite frankly, it's something that you see in Japanese politics as well, where there a culture of obligation means that, you know, certain, you know, lawmakers are bound by certain feelings of, I wouldn't say fealty, but, like, you know, I owe this guy, and so I will, even though it might be against my constituency.
Yeah, and here, yeah, I think the work recommendation is probably one of the best analogies I've heard yet, because when you recommend someone at work, do you lie about them? No. Do you? But if they have some questionable thing, like maybe you think they're a little lazy,
you don't bring it up
unless you think it's a serious problem. Whereas you might bring it up, whether it's a serious problem or not, if it was somebody you didn't know. But you're like, well, that's being unfair. Like, maybe they're a little lazy sometimes, but it's open to interpretation. So I'm not going to bring that up because that's not my business. And it's that kind of favoring that builds up over time and creates bias. And we run into it in tech journalism all the time. Should you be taking gifts, junkets, free gadgets from the companies you're covering? Because if you do, you start to feel like, oh, these guys are pretty nice. You know, they're not bribing you. But they're like, oh, yeah, keep that laptop for a couple extra weeks. That's no sweat. We don't care.
It's such a, you know, I think that's the crux of the problem / issue, is that it's so insidious because it's so disarmingly benign. It doesn't seem like, okay, you know, you do this for me, I'm going to give you an envelope stuffed with $1,000 bills.
Right.
Right, it's not that blatant. It's not that smack in your face. It's almost like, oh, you know, I have some, you know, I have a couple of tickets to see a game I can't make this weekend, but they're front row seats, you know, for the Knicks game or whatever. And that's how it starts. You know, it seems like a favor, or they're just doing it outside. Yeah, it's nothing to do with work, but you know.
And it's because we're human beings and it's a relationship. And you're like, oh, well, I don't want to turn the guy down. He's, you know, he's being very generous. You know, that's kind of rude to turn it down. And he doesn't expect me to give him a positive review just because he gave me some tickets. You know, he knows that I have to be honest, but it's going to nudge it. You're going to go to that one thing like, is this trackpad really bad? Well, I don't know. It's probably not that bad.
I know the guy. He's a nice guy.
Yeah.
It's like, why would he? And truth be told, it is not. I mean, you know, that issue is pervasive throughout all societies. And, you know, I mean, it's as a society becomes more complex and you have, you know, multiple parties making multiple demands, I mean, the ability to kind of objectively, you know, make decisions, I mean, becomes even more important, especially when you're dealing with tens of, you know, hundreds of millions of people, you know, 300 plus million people. I mean, you know, it's different than saying going to the family, it's like, hey, we're all going to Chuck E. Cheese.
Well, yeah. one of the great examples that Lessig uses is derivatives regulation, which is fairly well acknowledged to be one of the biggest causes of the recession, was a crash in derivatives. And one of the reasons that it crashed is it was unregulated. Banks didn't have to treat derivatives the same way they would treat other investments. And he talks about how when derivatives started to get popular, there was one congressman, and I can't remember his name now, who wrote a paper about how these were dangerous and they needed to be regulated, or, you know, there was going to be trouble. And everybody else just kind of ignored him, right? I could totally see this happening, because they're all like, well, we got all these financial managers we work with all the time, and they're telling us derivatives are fine, and they're new, so we don't really know if they're dangerous. So why rock the boat? Why try to go after regulating and cause all this trouble? Nobody cares if we don't act, right? And it was true at the time. Nobody did. So they didn't do it out of malice, like, haha, we're going to screw over the public and make our friends rich. It was more of like, oh, well, what's the harm? I mean, we don't really see the harm. And then there was another attempt to regulate them during the Clinton administration, and Robert Rubin cracked down on the CFTC, saying, why are you trying to get into regulating these things? This is not a good idea. This is only going to make people angry. And again, it was that attitude of like, you're wrong, you're bringing up the wrong questions, don't rock the boat.
And this is something I've noticed in all parts of society, is that when things are going good for the majority of people, they don't want to hear anything of how any kind of negativity that might somehow affect that positive effect, be it like increased cash, or like, you know, everyone gets extra lower prices, or something that benefits a good chunk of people. It's only when things start turning south do people become more critical, because I think, I don't know if it's a euphoria, but I think there's like, you know, hey, you know, no one's getting hurt at this moment.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like, why bring on the trouble of getting into that? It doesn't look like it's worth it. We don't know that. It can't be proven that it's a problem, right? It's a question. And all we're going to do is make a bunch of people upset. So why would you do that? It's like saying that, you know, I think the birthday cake tastes bad. Well, okay, so it tastes bad. Were you going to make a federal case out of it? Embarrass the cook? Ruin the birthday party? Just eat it. It's fine.
If you get sick, do it outside.
Exactly. And it's that kind of attitude of like, come on, you're being rude. You're being unfair to our friends. You know, if there were an obvious harm that everyone agreed was looming, and there were a lot of people coming at us and saying, hey, we beware of this harm, then yeah, but there's only the one guy saying it. So why ruin it for everybody else?
I think the big difficulty will be is that it's a pervasive view. It's not just, you know, a hallowed few. I mean, it's something that most people kind of have an opinion on. It's like, you know, all of us are doing well. I mean, the property market's a classic example. Like, you know, when right at 2006 and 2007, people, you know, some people are just like, hey, well, hold on here. All these people are buying homes with money they don't have, and they're still spending like drunks. Yeah. It's you know. People were saying, whoa, 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 what are you trying to do? You know, the real estate market is very important to the economy. You know, if you do this, my house, my home value will go down. I'll be worth less, at least in paper, I'll be worth less. And so, it wasn't some sort of conspiracy. It was just a lot of people had a vested interest. And it wasn't just super rich people. It was
the
average people.
The conditions were right for it to make sense for everyone to keep fueling that fire.
And once that candle goes out and everything falls apart, and that's, you know, this goes back to the whole saying of, you know, hindsight's 20/20. Right. Yeah, after everything breaks, but when the
banks counted on being too big to fail.
Yeah,
I mean that definitely played into it. They thought the government would probably bail them out. Maybe one or two, like a Lehman Brothers, would have to take a fall, but it was worth the risk because they probably came out of it okay. And guess what? They did. They had a problem there. It wasn't fun, but they didn't collapse because the government came and helped them out. They helped them through it, like they expected it that they would. I'm not saying that to say that the government shouldn't have helped them out, but it changes the calculus if you're like, well, we can take this risk because, frankly, the downside is we have to go through a bailout. And it's not the worst thing that could happen. I'm very interested to see what kind of solutions are proposed in Republic Lost. I imagine I can kind of get a sense from what he has written so far and what I've read that they'll have to do with changing who can donate money and the conditions under which donations are made. Because he points out, like, we have all these laws saying transparency. If you donate money, you have to make it public. He's like, that's one of the problems. You know who's giving you the money. So you think about that. If all of the donations were anonymous, you wouldn't feel any influence. If they were anonymous to the recipient, I mean.
Mm.
But since they're public for everyone, the recipient knows too. And go, oh, okay, yeah, that gave us a lot of money. That's cool. We like that. And it's why it makes sense for companies to be giving money to both sides. Everybody always, oh, why do they give money for both? Because they want the goodwill that it buys.
And ultimately, you know, it works. I mean,
yeah,
they wouldn't be doing it if it didn't.
Right. And that's again, that's Lessig's point. He's saying this isn't a bunch of evil people out to screw us all over. What they're doing is working within the system. The system was created to prevent the robber barons from taking bribes. It does a pretty good job of that. When people do take bribes, they tend to get caught and they tend to be chastised and people look down on them. But there's been this adaptive behavior. Humans are very adaptive to figure out how to get influence without using direct bribes. And so now we need to adapt to that and set up conditions that combat that adaptive behavior that humans have created. Really interesting. Really interesting stuff. Whole new perspective on the ills of government by reading this.
The illin government.
Yeah, government be illin. Well, that's it for this episode of East Meets West. Thanks, everybody. You can comment if you want. You don't feel like you have to. It's a very relaxed show. So brilliant.com/EMW is the place to go if you want to do that, though.
Yeah, no, it's we're glad to have listeners, and we're always glad to see your comments. Makes us feel like we're having a bigger discussion.
Exactly. We will probably, because Ting is sponsoring us for one more show here in October and a couple in November, we'll be a little more regular. That'll be one benefit for you, that we're taking money. We're being influenced to do the show more often. So we will. See you next time.
Bye.
Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.